So I feel like in abstraction, I get to talk about painting as painting, and I really get to question it, and I think there's something quite beautiful about it, and I think a lot of artists appeal to that because it is a visual language and it allows you to play with it.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.
Today's guest is a painter, Bianca Bacic. Welcome, Bianca.
Thank you, Johann. Thank you for having me.
Bianca, you are originally from Australia, but studied in the UK.
Yes, so I've done my master's in the UK. I've done my bachelor's in Australia.
So, The Wandering Dot is a title of the show, but it's not a title of a work, right? Where is it coming from?
So, one of my processes in when coming up with the exhibition, the body of work, I like to do a lot of research. So, at the time when I had this beautiful opportunity to exhibit at the chapel, I was in Düsseldorf, and I was at the Contemporary Museum, and I was walking around, and I came into one of the rooms, and it was a dedication to Paul Klee. And there was a quote on the wall in the right-hand corner, and the quote said, "A dot is a line that went for a walk." And I thought that was so incredibly beautiful. Simple, but beautiful.
And a dot is a line that went for a walk?
A walk. And at the time, I was thinking about writing as a metaphor for painting, and how, let's say, when you're writing or when you're doing a mark on a surface, you have ideas, but they're not fixed. There's this beautiful event that occurs as you're moving the mark through the surface, that the ideas develop. There's a resistance. Poorly explained. Basically, there is a, I want to say, like a method, an event with the mark dragging through, but there's also another side to it where the ideas get developed further. It's not fixed. And I think there's something quite beautiful with that interaction between the artist, the hand, the mind, the canvas. And I feel like that quote kind of said it, how it's the mark takes on its own persona and moves forward. So I've looked at his work a lot throughout my whole artistic career. He's always popped up. But I've looked at him in different ways. When I first came across his work, it was more about colour interaction. Later on, years later, it was more about his childlike drawings, that is very primitive essence. And this time I looked at it in terms of the mark, how it moves, how we perceive it, the energy, the kinetic energy, the perspective, but it's also nod to reality. It moves in so many different ways, and he was brilliant at this. So after I saw this quote, went back home, and I started drawing and researching his work, and I came across his lectures at the Bauhaus between 1921 to 1931. And these lectures, he was giving his students different scenarios of what the line could do. And I kind of took this on board, and I thought, you know what, I want to expand upon this, not really like take his lectures note by note, but to expand upon this idea. So each painting within this exhibition focuses on the mark in different aspects. So we have the fall, which is the dark red painting, and that looks at the grid, but in a very open, very shallow, kind of like a web net. So I looked at it in terms of having tension and how I have these little knots of tension and how the mark interacts with it and how the viewer perceives it and this closeness of the layers. Then, as I said, you have mirrored that has the marks get repeated a few times, but they're in different colours. So it talks about how colour interaction affects the mark, even though it's the exact same, and how we read that. And then you have Origins, which is the black, yellow, white painting. And that kind of, I want to talk about perspective of depth. So you have perspective that naturally occurs. So like landscape, you've got the sky, you've got the ground, you've got foreground, whatever. But also playing it with it with paint. So I had stripes that are black and white. So that is the highest contrast you can create on a canvas, is to have black and white stripes together. So that being a on top really push some things further front and further back, and it starts to have this beautiful like play. So that's what I was really interested in.
And tell me, how did you get into contemporary art or painting? Was it always clear that you wanted to become a painter within the field of contemporary art?
I think naturally, as a child, I was always drawing and making things with my hands. It wasn't until my mid-teens, where I went through some family hardship, that I realized I wanted to give this as a go and give this as a career.
You went through what?
Some family hardship.
What does it mean? My English is not...
No, it's all right. So basically, without giving my dirty laundry on air, went through a very rough time, so uh-huh. financially and a few other things. And it made me look at the world very differently, kind of like that child naive bubble is popped.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that life is incredibly hard, so might as well do what you love and give it all you have.
Uh-huh, so, uh-huh. That's so it was sort of an escapism?
Yes, I guess.
You fled into making art?
Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh.
So then I realized, I was like, yep, I want to make this as a career. And I decided that I needed to go to an art school in Sydney to see what type of artist I wanted to be and how that was going to work. And the school was going to offer you different classes with different mediums. So I dived into that. And for the next 3 years, I was dabbling in different mediums, but I knew I was a painter from the very beginning. I had this natural instinct with a medium. I was very self-taught and I'm a drawer at heart.
Mm-hmm.
So going through my bachelor's, you kind of try and develop the language where you have teachers giving you different tasks from portraiture to landscape to helping you with different processes. And then from there, you start questioning who you are as an artist and what fits with you almost. You mm-hmm. start doing things that don't work. You're like, nah, that's not me. And you continue forward.
To develop a language
and yeah. to develop also your skills and also how to talk about art.
And when do you think you started to do work, which is your language now? So maybe to describe, you do abstract paintings, but they are the result of a photorealistic beginning or like based on photographs,
yes.
which then get abstracted and it's hardly visible anymore where they come from. You sort of see structures mm-hmm. and to me it reminds often like architecture, you know, like yeah. from the surroundings, but they get completely, they have a realistic underlayer, but then totally turn abstract. And how it's a sort of your language you developed. When did you do a work where you noticed, ah, okay, this is a way to go? Was it already in your bachelor period or?
No, actually, it's taken me a very long time to get here. So I think for me, I came in as an artist, as more of a traditional artist, obviously because back home, that's what I was told what sells, that's how you make your career. So I did figurative and portraiture.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously when you go through bachelor's, that gets questioned, that all gets thrown out the window for me, wasn't what I wanted to say. So I went through this whole process and journey of questioning and making works. So I went, the figure ended up dropping off the canvas, ended up just being more like color-filled paintings. I realized my composition was terrible, I could not work with that,
mm-hmm.
didn't have what I wanted to say and didn't know what I wanted to say with it. So then I worked more in this kind of symbolism, spiritual aspect, where I had what I call like a door series, looking at kind of like other artworks that is prehistoric and like incorporating that in contemporary context. And I realized I was just basically overstimulated being in Europe at the time, and that didn't quite work. And I kept questioning myself. And then it's actually in my master's, it kind of all fell into place. Oddly enough, I found that I've always had a process, that process being copying from reality, from photos and sketching and drawing and creating this composition, then transferring this composition into a pencil or gouache drawing where color gets introduced and that gets translated onto a canvas. That has always been the groundwork for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always kept that. And I realized, let's try and push this gouache drawing further onto a surface. And I was looking at contradiction at the time. And I remember this amazing essay by Rosalind Krauss called The Grid. Mm-hmm. I read it in my bachelor's when I was 20. And she talks about contradiction within using the grid as a tool and all this other stuff. So I thought maybe let's use the grid, not as a tool, but as a structure within the painting. And let's also combine it with gestural expressionistic marks and have this kind of fighting element within the surface. So I was doing that a lot in my master's, having the grid in front of the gestural marks, behind making the grid the gestural marks, and all these elements. But then I realized this is very shallow thinking of what contradiction could be on a surface. And I was like, okay, let's push this further. And I ended up trying to think of the grid as a type of armature on a surface where it's kind of like the skeleton, but that didn't work. And then one day I thought of doing a clear, transparent stripe.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the first stripe, and I did it at the time where the painting was so dripping wet. It ended up blurring, but then some of it was dry, and it was made this amazing effect. I was like, okay, let's do this stripe all over the surface. And mm-hmm. that's when I created something that I didn't quite understand at the time, but I kept going at it. So the more works you made, the deeper the understanding becomes, and mm-hmm. starting to see the visual effects.
While doing it.
Yes. Like the painting starts, for me, this when what happens when the stripes occur, the painting steps in. That's when the drawing, the picture almost stops.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this tackle, this problem to solve as an artist with the canvas.
Maybe you can walk us through the process. So first of all, how do you choose? You do the photos yourself?
Yes.
Yes. So one photo is based in a mall, for example.
Mm-hmm.
How do you choose? I guess you do a lot of photos.
So I have a film camera.
Film, not digital. Okay.
The reason being, A, it stops me from taking a million photos because it's obviously very expensive medium. I'm also a terrible photographer, terrible. So it allows chance to play, which I really like. Sometimes the composition becomes quite different to what you picture. Anyway, so you take a photo, let's say, in the mall, as we said, and I will take three photographs from that mall series that I particularly like. So maybe at the time I'm looking for circular shapes for a structure, or I'm interested in the body moving through space. So I find photographs with a figure moving through space and pick three. And sometimes I will collide all three together in sketches, or I'll pick a single one depending on what I want to say. So let's say we pick a single one and I start drawing. And I draw the image over and over again in different ways.
But you don't project. You make a drawing of that image?
Yes, like a sketch.
On
like
a sketch, but like you don't project the image on the the paper or the canvas?
Not yet.
No, okay.
So I start drawing, and I start perfecting the composition. I think naturally for me, composition probably is my weakest point, something that I need to solely focus on. I think drawing allows me to do that. And then taking this sketch, I transfer it to a piece of paper where I start doing the color, the gouache. So it allows me to just focus on color relationships with the mark. It's a whole different type of thinking. So kind of breaking down this process. So the color gets introduced and I start thinking about what wants to be pushed back, what form needs to go forward, and starts getting really abstracted. And I think about how the audience's eye would potentially look or go around the surface if this was painting.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do that once or twice. Sometimes it takes a while to get the colors correct. And once that's done, that then gets projected onto a canvas.
Uh-huh.
And then I start adding the color and I mimic it as much as possible from the gouache drawing. And then from there, that's when the stripes get introduced onto the canvas. And that's where this type of play almost steps in.
And how do you choose the size of a canvas?
I think there's moments where you've done this for for a good couple of years now. There's certain sizes me as an artist I correspond to. So I'll have I love this 2 meter in height by 150 in length. That size is particularly my favorite, just because of the viewer's bodily presence with this very elongated canvas. It's very much like a huge door almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so it depends on the image, but I usually have rigid sizes. So I kind of fit the sketch to it.
And what's the process of taking photos? Like, where do you do that? Do you carry a camera always? Or
yes.
you go out like an impressionist with the effort to do so? Or is it coming casually?
I like
what's
that word.
Of the motive?
The idea of being an impressionist and going out into the world and looking. That's quite beautiful, isn't it? Yes, that's basically what I do. So I have this film camera with me constantly. If I'm walking the streets of London or having this beautiful privilege of traveling, just because the art grid does allow you to travel quite a bit.
Yeah.
The camera is always with me. So I'm here taking photos of moments I think that could be a potential great composition, or just in a way I just want to archive something. And it allows me to have and build up a database. So at the moment I've had 3 years worth of film photographs of memories of my personal life, of just even sightseeing and architecture, and you're just kind of collecting. That's the way I like look at it.
And why is it important that you take the photo? Why can't you take a stock photo or another photo?
It's training your eye, isn't it? I think for me, when I said before that composition has always been a struggle, one of the ways for me to train my eye was actually taking photos.
Because that's the first decision of the painting, so to speak, right?
Yeah, it's this first decision. You're already framing it, and then you're also starting to flatten reality. You're starting to make it into an abstract form. A photograph is already abstracting reality, right? Mm-hmm. So that is the first step. It's kind of like it's holding my hand almost through the process. Like, okay, let's go next step to abstraction. Let's go to another step of abstraction. It's like this gradual, slow progression.
But when you mention composition, isn't the composition given by the photo already?
Yes, it is, but then it gets tweaked and perfected, if that makes sense. If I just take an outline of a photo, you start to see the repetition, right?
Okay, you mean that process of when you start to draw the photo?
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting here because you make a transformation of the photo in the drawing, but then project again, which is like a photo again, of your drawing on the canvas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then start painting it, and then the color comes last?
Color comes with the gouache drawing.
Okay, which then gets projected.
Yes, and then that gets projected and replicated, and then the stripes add another...
The grid. Yeah.
Adds another projection of color as well.
Yeah, and the colors, it's a specific palette, right?
It's, at the moment, I think I'm quite fascinated with these strong colors, because prior to when I first started doing the stripe series, I was using the stripes as a type of glazing medium.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the pigments need to be quite translucent. So obviously when it's translucent, you can start making colors, right? So you can make colors without mixing colors. So this means if I have blue underneath and I do a yellow stripe, I make green.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's an optical illusion. It's not really there.
Yeah.
So that, because of that, like, you're very limited on what colors you could do, because there's only a certain amount of colors available that are translucent enough to make this optical effect without completely destroying what's underneath.
Uh-huh. And which materials is it?
It's oil.
Oil. All of it is oil.
Always oil.
And the base of the drawing is?
Oil.
Also oil. Okay.
Yeah. So I make my own like oil paint through pigments. And it allows me to control and know exactly what the color is going to do. So it became, the stripes were optical, and then I realized that I was very fixed of what colors I could use and what the outcome could be. And that was quite frustrating, because I was like, there is so many combinations I could create with color. So I had to adjust my process slightly, where now I'm allowed to use bold colors and feel like it's translucent. And I think I got really excited about it. So this past few series have been quite intense in the colors because of it, just because I'm really just fascinated of what I can do with a color that is very flat or doesn't have this ability to see through.
And what are the motives, and where's an indication that you can assume from the title of the work, right?
Yes. So I love the title, where it doesn't fully tell you what the original image picture was. But it kind of gives you a slight nod to it.
Yeah.
So these words like origins, mirrored, or the fall, they're very open-ended words. It doesn't give everyone the exact same image. Everyone has their own image in their mind of what the fall is or what.
But with the painting, the fall, I at least would imagine there you can see leaves.
Yes, exactly. So it
is it correct?
Correct. It's an apple tree.
Apple tree, yeah.
So
yeah.
I was making a little bit of a joke to myself, like Adam and Eve, they ate the apple, the forbidden fruit, and they fell out of grace, basically. So it's kind of like a little nod to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so mirrored, same idea. It was more within the process of the works where I had basically four line works that I repeated a lot on the surface, flipped it, mirrored it, and they're all in different colors. So I called it mirrored from the action of the painting.
And the photos are from the recent past?
2-3 years.
Okay.
Some of them are a little bit older, actually. Uh-huh.
This you developed, where did you finish your master's?
At the Royal College of Arts in London.
And tell me how, because I mean, of course, Australia is quite British influenced, obviously, but it's far away. So how did you come to the decision to leave Australia to go to the UK?
So when I was doing my bachelor's, I realized that Australia, obviously, it's a very young country, which has amazing possibilities, but it's still developing, especially within the art world for me. And I found Australian art had a certain type of image that I just didn't fit in. It wasn't what I was interested in. And I was interested in the language of art as a global concept.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized I needed to get out of Australia to really understand how I could push my practice further and to start kind of having this dialogue with the rest of the world. So I realized quite early on, so I was always working towards moving overseas, but obviously you have to be patient and get the skills up your sleeve and start having so many other jobs to start saving, trying to find a way to go overseas and what would that look like and start a whole new life. So it mm-hmm. took a long time, but I got there. I think for me, it was necessary. It's not necessary for every Australian artist.
Mm-hmm.
That art world is changing. I haven't been back for properly for 5 years.
Because it's so far, it's not so easy to go back and forth, right?
I go back once a year, but I'm seeing family. I'm not so much communicating to the art world.
Yeah.
Here and there, I am still keeping contact with artist friends, but it's different. But yeah, so I'm not so involved day to day in the Australian art scene. So maybe it is changing. I'm actually not too sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's interesting. I find, you know, obviously Instagram, you get Instagram giving you suggestions. And every time I see a new artist that I do not follow and I look at their work, I can tell you straight away if they're Australian or not.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain type of aesthetic. I don't know how to describe it, but a certain type of aesthetic that I'm like, yep, instantly they're Australian.
Mm-hmm.
So for mm-hmm. me, that works for a lot of people and you can make a great career in Australia doing it. But for me, it wasn't the language I wanted to adapt to.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't easy, yeah? I understand.
And it's never easy. You're leaving your support network, your home, where you grew up. Like, Australia is a very beautiful country. Like, I miss going to the beach every day and sitting in the sun.
You're from Sydney?
Yes, from Sydney.
Yeah, and you were born and raised there?
Born and raised.
Yeah.
So you know every inch of Sydney,
yeah.
and you just love it. And there's a great comfort to it, but at the same time, I was itching to see the whole world and being influenced by them.
Yeah. And then how big was the gap between your bachelor and beginning of your master's studies?
About 2 to 3 years, 3 years.
Okay.
So there was a bit of a gap. So I worked at galleries in Sydney, different galleries, an Indigenous gallery to a photography gallery. So I got that side of the art world to understand how sales work, how communicating to clients work.
Uh-huh.
And I was also doing commissions at the time because I just, something that was able to make, I don't know, quick buck. Sounds terrible saying that, but like allowed
sure,
to
yeah.
build up money
and
to go overseas.
And use your practice to, and your skills you learn to.
Yeah, it was a bit, it's a bit different though. When I say commissions in Australia, it's more like I go into a house and the lady tells me, I can't afford this painting. Can you please replicate it, but in your own style, but in this color palette and this way and that way. And you're like, I'm literally just a hand for you.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And like sometimes they give you a bit more of a creative lean, but it's always, it's their home, their vision.
Yeah.
But that was a way for me to make some money and also to start getting my name out there in Australia, which didn't really do anything, to be honest. So I was doing that, but it's also allowed me some time to almost, I want to say, slow down my own personal art practice
uh-huh.
and to start thinking, again, as I said, the question that occurred in Europe, to start thinking, what do I want to paint and what is my subjectivity, and to think about what type of artist I want to be. And
And your practice of this sort of process from photos to drawing gouache and painting, that started in the UK?
Yes. I've always been drawing. Sketching and drawing has always been fundamental for no matter what art I was doing. That was always the first step. I would say I'm a drawer first rather than a painter. So drawing was always there. The middle step, I guess, yeah, the photograph and the middle step of the gouache, to adding the colour, that's new. That happened in Europe. I think that happened in Europe for a long time as well, because I didn't have a studio a lot. I was still trying to find my feet. And when I did have a studio, I kind of took to this process of having a moment just to play with colour and to find different ways of pushing it before applying it to the canvas, which also saves you, when you're still experimenting, it saves you a bit of money. So when an artwork does go wrong, it is costly. So it allows you just to kind of take a moment to make sure the work kind of gets over the finish line a little bit easier for you.
Because of the materials, you mean?
Yeah, the materials. Yeah, of course, it, it all adds up and does get very expensive very quickly, especially when you're painting on such a large scale.
And but interesting with abstract images, they're so international, no? It's like a global language.
It
much is. More than figuration.
Yes, I completely agree to that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe it's just by abstracting, you start to have, I don't know, maybe more of a contemporary feel a lot easier sometimes. You start to have your perspective involved a bit more in the language. You get to question things a lot more. I don't know. Yeah, you get. You know what? I like that. So I feel like in abstraction, I get to talk about painting as painting, and I really get to question it, and I think there's something quite beautiful about it, and I think a lot of artists appeal to that because it is a visual language and it allows you to play with it.
But the image, after all, is not that relevant. It's more like you just need an image to, to start a painting, right?
100%. I find like people are like, oh, like as you said before, what is why is this image important? It's not.
No.
It is literally the skeleton of the painting for
to have a starting point.
To have a reason
to paint a painting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And tell me, because you said at the beginning that you started to become an artist because of sort of troubled times. When you reflect that, how is it now to look back at these times and sort of your trigger moment to become an artist?
How do I look back at it? Obviously, one wishes none of that occurred, right? It makes life a bit easier, but at the same time, it was very crucial. It was a very important moment in my life. I look back at it, you just have to accept it and move on. That's the way I look at it.
It sounded like that this drove you into arts. And is it like a good thing? Or is this like, did it work? Is it like healing? Did it work out? Or is it like...
It wasn't a healing. It kind of gave me the courage. The almost like, fuck it. Like, let's go for this career. Let's give it all I have. I have nothing to lose.
Okay, okay.
That type of attitude, if that makes sense.
Okay, I see. Then after all, maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. Yes. Well, I'm standing here.
I mean,
here,
there's no choice anyway.
Exactly.
Of the past, no?
Exactly.
And, but so there were no artists in your family or like there were no role models of artists.
No.
You were influenced by at least the profession of an artist.
So there's... I do believe there is a creative gene in the family, but no one is an artist and no one pursued it. I think you have to understand, like, my grandparents migrated from Croatia to Australia. They were building their bricks and water. Like, they were trying to make a foundation, a home. They were...
It went in the 70s or 80s or...?
It varies between 50s and 60s.
Okay, okay.
So, you can understand, it's like, it was a very hard time for them. So they were told, go and get a job, save some money, make a house and continue on.
Yeah, your grandparents.
My grandparents. Yeah. So my parents were raised in like, you need to have a safety net and then you can do what you want on the side.
Yeah.
But I find my parents were quite modern for that generation especially. I think they understood that I'm a bit headstrong sometimes. So they're like, she's got to do it. So might as well help her as much as we can in terms of encouragement. Actually, not so much encouragement. They were very, my mom's a very hard critic in a good way. I remember the first time I told her I wanted to pursue this art career, she turned to me and was like, well, you know, we can't catch you if you fall. Like, you're literally on your own in this career.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, I understand. I got this. She's like, you got to do your three jobs. And I hope you understand that you still need to love what you do. And I was like, yes, I'll do the three jobs. I'll do it all. And I'll love what I do. And she was like, okay, prove to me that if you do this, there's a short course that you could do in high school to do at the National Art School, so my bachelor's at the school.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, prove to me that you can get into this course and that you can go there every day and do 10 hours and love and come home and love what you do.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, so I got in, put a portfolio together, got in, did this 2-week intensive course, and I came home with the biggest smile on my face and I loved it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So she realized then obviously this was going to be a career. So she started asking around her friends, her family, who knows an artist? Who can I talk to?
How old were you then?
I was 17.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so she wanted to understand what does this career look like. And I think we're quite lucky where my...
She found an artist?
She found, met a few. So okay. One that was definitely more traditional within the Croatian community.
Mm-hmm.
And he made money through commissions and doing, when he was younger, political art, but not so much anymore. It's very pictorial-esque.
Mm-hmm.
And then also found another artist who was very much more in the contemporary industry, who very abstract color-filled paintings. So I had very bipolar choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I met with them both. And both of them will always say, it's a long journey, you have a long, it's going to take until your mid-30s until you feel like you have your feet.
Mm-hmm.
That's only if you get there. So just keep experimenting while you're young and find your language. So that was the most common thing. And it was interesting because I was able to go into both their studios and see their process.
Mm-hmm.
So the Croatian artists, more traditional, was a lot of life drawing, figurative, models. It was a lot of, again, sketching, planning the composition. But for me, he also showed me a lot of the sales side, what mm-hmm. he would do to kind of have a bit of commissions underneath his belt, who he was talking to and all that stuff, which was interesting. At the time, I think I might have been too young to understand.
Because he was self-marketing, of course, to get like commissions to...
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So he was very involved in different communities, donating a lot of works to charities and kind of getting his name that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the other artists who was there because they love it. And they had a very up and down journey, and she was kind of telling me, like, you have your highs and your lows a lot, and you have to just keep pushing through. There'll be moments where you think you're on top of the world. So she won a few huge art prizes. So art prizes are huge in Australia,
because mm-hmm.
that's the only way to be seen and to exhibit. So she won a huge art prize, and her career took off. But then she was forced to do the exact same thing over and over and over again because that's what she was recognized as.
Yeah.
And she goes, that stopped me from growing.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I think I learned a lot from her as well to kind of, sometimes you need to stamp your own feet on the ground and understand that you're the artist, you need to dictate what's good and what's bad.
Yeah, I think often people underestimate how entrepreneurial it is to become an artist, you know, because I think it's very comparable to be a entrepreneur in the sense that you need to be innovative, you need to take big risks, you somehow have to build a brand, but at the same time develop a signature, but don't be too repetitive.
Yeah, too rigid.
Then also need to be strategist, but mainly the big risks combined with the need of being innovative. Not inventive, but sort of bring something new to a discussion which is millions of years old, and then react to what's there, but don't repeat, but add something new. So when did you notice that you found your language? Did you feel it in
yeah,
the moment?
Yeah, it was yeah? a feeling. It was just like, as I said, I did the first stripe, and I finished the painting, and I stood back, and I was like, okay, for the first time, I have no idea what I have done. I do not understand it, but I can't stop looking at it. And I think that for me was a huge pivotal moment. I was like, okay, I think I can explore this further and further and have this go down a tunnel almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm currently down that tunnel a few years later, and I'm still so excited about the possibilities and what it can contribute to.
And how is it now when you see the paintings here hanging at the chapel?
Mm-hmm.
And that's your fifth exhibition now? You had this show also in Münster in the art space?
It helps a lot to see your work exhibited. It's completely different from taking the artworks out of the studio. The studio is always a mess. It has a different type of energy. Then you strip that away, you put this canvas into, let's say, the chapel, it just hums in a different note. And it also starts to remove myself from the equation. I get to see it as a viewer. So I think that allows me to understand when a painting works together or when it doesn't. Sometimes you have paintings that are a bit of an outlier in the series, which is normal, it happens. But you need to understand when that happens, and I think it allows you to see your work as a collection and what's working, what's not. Because there's so many ideas that's coming in and out of the studio. I'm still learning of how to filter the same coherent idea. So obviously with this exhibition, I was looking at mark making a lot. So I was zoning into that, and sometimes you get a bit distracted. And I think it's important to see it as a coherent whole in an exhibition.
Great. Cool. Yeah, thank you so much for taking us with you on that journey, and thanks for this beautiful exhibition. And I look forward to see what's coming in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.